Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is Thursday, February 25th, 2021. Let the record reflect it is 3:37. I apologize for being late for those that are online and in the room. A little bit of chaos here with all of the recent stuff with the positive test and people not being here, and a little bit of nuttiness in the building. But the Senate has decided, at least for some of us, we're going to stay here and do business. The people's work needs to get done, and we're behind with what's going on in the House. So we're going to keep working and follow all the other protocols. Today we have present. We have Vice Chair Reinbold is excused. We have Senator Costello on the phone. We have Senator Holland in person, and hopefully we'll have Senator Kawasaki telephonically here soon. I have myself, Chair Schauer. I'd like to remind everybody, please turn off your cell phones. Staff with us, we've got Terrence Shanigan, Committee Aide for State Affairs, Carrie Cooper, writer with Senate Records, and we have Alex. Yes. Thank you. Should know that. Wasn't circled. From the LAO. We have two items on today's agenda. We're going to be hearing public testimony, as well as working on a new version of Senate Bill 25, State Government Finances website, sponsored by Senator Wilkowski. Then we'll bring up SB 39, ballot custody, tampering voter, registered mail with invited testimony for today. Before we get started, and I want to make sure that we have Senator Costello. Can you hear us okay?
He has disconnected from the call.
Oh, she's not there?
Nope.
All right. She'll come back on the line, I'm sure. So, I believe we can continue to do business, right? Without, we got to have three? The whole time? Even if
when we start.
When we start. Okay. So we... That's to start anything or the whole at ease. Senate State Affairs is back on the record. We've lost one of our members here for a moment, trying to reestablish contact before we can continue to make sure we have a quorum to do business. So we're going to stand by for a moment. You able to reach her? Okay. I'm going to hold on to that for a second. We'll wait if she pops back up. I apologize, folks that are watching online. I know there's not too many, but we're going to have to follow the rules here, which means we need to make sure we have contact established for a third member of the five-member committee. Part of COVID craziness that continues to make it hard to do business.
It's an operator.
We're going to go, just as an explanation, folks, we're going to go back onto an at-ease for a moment until we can make sure we have communication reestablished. I'll go back on the record. We'll continue. Off the record. State Affairs back on the record. And Senator Costello, how do you hear me?
I hear you great. Thank you. I was on for a while and didn't hear anything, and then it got dropped. So I'm on, and thank you for a bunch of folks reaching out to me. Appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks, Mia, for joining us here. We had to have that third one to have the quorum, so I appreciate you getting back in contact. So we will continue on from here back to where I am. So are there any questions or comments from committee members before we proceed with the first items on the agenda?
I have no questions. Thank you.
Okay, and not hearing any from our online participant committee members. We're going to move on to the first item on our agenda, which is going to be SB 25, State Government Finance website. As a summary, the deadline for amendments has passed, and we're going to be introducing a CS today based on changes from the sponsor, going through the explanation of changes and hearing public testimony to get through SB 25. And then just as a note, for my plan for this bill is we'll be setting it aside to do amendments from committee members once they're all back in and we figure out what's going to happen with the building, because we're in this weird place right now, about two-thirds of the building gone. As a note for the committee, we have Commissioner, and I want to verify that with Mr. Zygmunt, Director of Finance. Is Commissioner Chewbacca with you as well? Hans, if you can hear me. Hans, you were kind of cutting out. If that's you, Director, can you confirm you can hear us okay?
Yes, I can hear you okay, and Commissioner Chewbacca should be on the line with me as well, but we're not in the same building.
Okay, Commissioner Chewbacca, can you hear me? It's going to be one of those days.
I will see if I can connect with her outside of this as well.
And Hans, when that happens, can you just go ahead and let me know, just break in wherever we are and say we've got her on the line, because I wanted to make sure we had the appropriate folks here to answer questions today?
Very good.
Thank you. Okay, we do have, well, I just talked about who we've got on the line from the Department of Administration to help answer questions for us. Let's see. We're going to go ahead and at this point get into the changes that the sponsor, Senator Wilikowski, has made, who's here with us today. So let's go ahead and get into Mr. Senator Holland. Can you give me a motion, please, to move the committee substitute?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate State Affairs Committee substitute for Senate Bill 25, Work Order 32-Lima Sierra 0217/Bravo, be adopted as a working document.
Thank you, Senator Holland. I'm going to object for the purposes of discussion. Senator Wilikowski, when you are ready and your committee aide, can you go ahead and place yourselves on the record and take us through an explanation of changes, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill Wilikowski. I'm a state senator representing East Anchorage and Jaybear. And joining with me today is my staff member, Nate Graham, who has worked done the work on this. And he's spent the last couple weeks reaching out, working with your office, with your staff, working with the Department of Administration. They collaboratively, I think, have come up with some changes. I think that most of us agree on, that trying to resolve some of the concerns that the Department of Administration had, trying to lower the proposed fiscal note. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll have Mr. Graham walk you through the proposals.
Thank you. Nate, when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Nate Graham, staff to Senator Bill Wilikowski. So we had proposed four different changes in from our initial discussion. The first change would clarify that the Department of Administration could use unaudited numbers for their estimates of state revenues as well as state expenditures, this being because the state only does an audit once a year and we're requiring monthly data. So we're allowing them to, you know, just want to clarify that it could be an estimation. The other changes would allow the estimated totals of the fund balances for the statutory budget reserve, the constitutional budget reserve, and the permanent fund earnings reserve. And this is, again, just so they could, you know, it doesn't need to be, you know, accurate down to the dollar, as long as they're trying to be accurate. The next change that we made would clarify that state agencies that do not currently use the central accounting system would also have to work with the Department of Administration to provide them with the necessary financial information outlined in this bill. The previous version of this bill just included the departments that use the central accounting agency, but we've discovered through the last hearing that a lot of state corporations and the university don't use it, so we wanted to clarify that they would also be responsible for providing that information to the Department of Administration. The next change was a recommendation from Senator Reinbold, and we were going to add a transitional provision that would require the Department of Administration to maintain their current online checkbook as of February 2021. And this is on page six. And it would basically ensure that the website that we have right now would remain online, so none of our checkbook wouldn't go anywhere. And, you know, while they're working into this more comprehensive bill, that we would still get the basic information. And then the final change is page five, lines 3-8, and it clarifies that the Alaska Online Checkbook will have a searchable information related to state procurement contracts and independent contractors. And it just reads a searchable internet website. So the online checkbook will have a link to a searchable internet website that provides information related to state service procurement contracts, including name, compensation, contract length, and contract type, and a searchable internet website that provides information related to independent contractors engaged by the state by agency, including name, compensation, contract length, and contract type. And those were all the changes that we had seen in the CS.
Thank you. Are there any questions from committee members at this time regarding the CS for Senate Bill 25?
No, no, thank you.
Thank you. I'm not hearing any from anyone online. All right. Thank you, Senator Wilkowski and Nate, for the questions, for taking us through the changes. Are there any other objections at this time? Seeing none, I'm going to remove my objection as well. The CS will be adopted as the committee's working document. Thank you. Senator Wilkowski, you're welcome. I know you probably can excuse your staff if they want to go, but if you would like to stay for questions or working through some, having the DOF and DOA folks online, we can certainly do that this time.
Do you want me to take a seat in the back, Mr. Chairman, or just stay here?
If you have questions that you might want answered, since there were a few that were bouncing around, you're welcome to stay. While we have the experts online, that's maybe not quite normal, but I know there was a lot of questions, and we're missing two of the senators that had a lot of questions here, and it would help, I think, if we kind of guide the discussion just to bounce through those so people both online and those here can get some of those questions answered. Okay. All right. Let's get going. I've got some questions, and Director Zygmunt, have you found Commissioner Shibaka yet?
Yes, Chair. I have, and she is on the line.
Okay. I'm going to start with a couple high-level ones as we go through and see if that jogs any memory questions for the four of us that are here discussing the bill. A couple big things are, can we just get from your perspective kind of the 30,000-foot view on IRIS? There was a lot of discussions about last time and the kind of why what of what it does, more for the public record since we didn't have anybody here last time to give the administration side of this, whoever would like to take that.
Sure. To the chair, the IRIS upgrade, as I recall the question originally.
Real quick, just because we have multiple folks, as we switch back and forth, just make sure you put yourself on the record with name and job title, please.
Yes. For the record, my name is Hans Zygmunt, and I am the division director for the Division of Finance at the Department of Administration. And, Mr. Chair, the question was, you know, about the intersection really between IRIS and the upgrade project and the work that's going on there, and the work that would need to be done to produce the online checkbook as is required in this amended bill, and the resource constraint that we really face is that there are only five programmers and one database specialist employed in the Division of Finance that are currently 100% deployed to working on the IRIS upgrade project. You know, IRIS is the state's central accounting system, the state's HR and payroll system, procurement system, and the vendor services system. It's going through a massive upgrade that's a huge leap forward in technology, everything from the underlying technology stack all the way through the user interface is being upgraded right now, and that's a multi-year project, and those resources are fully deployed there. Alongside of that is an upgrade of the underlying data warehouse and the Alder, which is the reporting tool that we use to pull accounting information out of IRIS. And that reporting tool is central to being able to produce the online checkbook. The effort required for the online checkbook is, as defined in the bill, we estimated about a six-month effort. We've done some research talking with other states, Ohio in particular, about the workload that went into producing their online checkbook, which is very similar to the online checkbook that this bill requires. Ohio had a team of five individuals with available capacity that they dedicated for 6 months to the implementation of their best-in-class online checkbook. And additionally, they had two resources that have been dedicated full-time to maintaining that checkbook since it's come online, and about a $75,000 a year budget for maintaining that software on an annual basis that's shared between three different departments. And so, we look at the online checkbook as an important tool that's going to support transparency into public finances. We're excited about the opportunity to develop this new robust online checkbook. We feel that the intent of the bill is to create an online checkbook that looks like the one in Ohio, and it would offer rich data visualization and easy to understand transparency for state expenditures. But we do face, significant resource constraints due to the IRS upgrade. But we think that the October 2022 effective date is achievable with some modest investment.
Okay, so IRS versus online checkbook. We have people listening. Explain.
So IRS itself is the state's accounting system. That is where the actual transactions are performed. If we are running an accounting expense voucher or a journal entry into the general ledger, those types of things are happening within IRS. That's where the transactions happen. Online checkbook provides a visualization into what the state's where the state is spending money and where the money is coming from. At least that's in the future state. So, in the future state, will show us what are the fund balances, estimates of how much money is in the constitutional budget reserve, how much money is in the statutory budget reserve, how much money is in the earnings reserve account, and those would be estimated values as well. And so it really is a way for legislators, for people in the public, people perhaps working at think tanks, to have a insight into the state's finances that is well presented and easy to understand. That's what the online checkbook is, as opposed to really a general ledger system, which is what IRS is.
I have more questions for you, and I'm certainly opened up. Anybody can jump in. Last couple of weeks we've been doing a little bit of research and just trying to think of things, because this is not an area I'm familiar with. So why was an upgrade required to do this? Was it unsupported? What happened? Software? What drove the upgrade requirements? And is everything we need in this upgrade? Is it sufficient? Should we be looking forward? So kind of three questions together. Kind of what drove an upgrade? Was it supported or not? What happened? What's in it? And cost of upgrade? And we are a little time constrained, so you don't feel the need to go into the weeds on explanation. Keeping it at 30,000 feet is fine, but I've got those kind of three questions, if that makes sense. I can restate them if you need.
Certainly. I can answer all of that, I believe. The original IRS system was something called AMS 3.9. That's the core of what the IRS system is. And that went out of support back in April of 2019 when CGI, the company that's the vendor, they released the new 4.0 version of Advantage. Since the department was actively pursuing and engaged in upgrading the system, CGI has continued support for version 3.9 for us as long as we continue to go through the process of completing that upgrade. The upgrade itself is it contains a lot of things. It's a new underlying technology stack that's databases, servers, operating system, and other software. It's completely redesigned user interface, so the user home pages are tailored to the business role with a mobile-first design approach. We have something on the order of 150 new features that are planned to go live on the finance side. A couple of the major features that are in the new system include GASB 87 compliant lease accounting, a new bond accounting module that's going to allow us to get rid of a secondary software package that we purchased to do bond accounting right now. We'll have about 75 new features at go live on the HR side of the house. We also have the opportunity with the upgraded system to do a lot of process automation that we currently can't do, and that includes things like automating timesheets, payroll correction documents, automating vendor setup. So there's a lot of really interesting new functionality within the system that we're going to be doing with our current budget. I think that the third part of the question related to whether or not there are going to be additional needs. Two things to that point. Number one is CGI has changed its normal approach to upgrades. In the past, every couple of years, they rolled out a new system. Clients would have to go through these massive upgrades. That really won't be the case after moving to version 4. Because they will instead do periodic pushes of improved software, more like the way you get an upgrade on your phone. So that will be a significant improvement and a big cost saver to the state over time. But there are additional functionality that we can implement that are available within version 4 that within our current budget we're not going to be able to do. Some of those things would be, for example, statewide grantee or grantor type functionality within IRIS. Right now, various departments use different systems to manage grants, as either, you know, where the state is either the grantor or the grantee. And then those systems are then interfaced over to IRIS. And so, you know, that's an example of a place where we could add additional functionality on what we call the roadmap. There's other roadmapped items, some enhanced accounts receivable technologies, things of this nature, perhaps scanners for scanning inventory and automating inventory management processes. So those are the kind of things that are really in the future that are not really within budget, but are within the scope of where IRIS can go in the long run.
You didn't answer a final one just real quick, was cost. Do you have a total cost of this? And while I'm asking you, I'm thinking another one, timeline. There were some, as I remember at least, there were quite a few questions about timeline implementation. Some of the senators have been looking at this for some time. So can you just, I don't need a whole breakdown of cost, but kind of what the project has cost. Are we over cost, under cost? Where do we sit with where we're at? And there may be another question from somebody that talked about timeline. I don't remember exactly, but there was kind of some raised eyebrows on how long this was taking. So just speaking to that would be helpful.
Sure. So the upgrade will be completed. Right now, our estimated completion date is the 25th of January in 2022. The planning phase leading up to the actual build was about a year. So there was a significant investment in planning up front and also a significant investment in training. Specifically, we spent nearly a month training our staff on new project management techniques. Scaled Agile is our new approach. So we made that investment in staff. And then we started the build phase. The build phase itself is really about a year. And then we'll go into what we call our achieve phase, which takes about 3 months, and where we do change management and training. And then there's a period of post-implementation support from January of 22 through April of 22, where we have the vendor on site to help us with that transition phase. And so this is a very typical implementation schedule for this kind of a massive upgrade, not inconsistent with experience I had in another state. Certainly, it's very much on par with, in fact, probably faster than what CGI is doing in some other locations. So I feel very good about the timeline. As far as budget goes, the appropriation, the capital appropriation that we received was there were two appropriations. There was an original appropriation of $4.1 million and a second $7.1 million appropriation. And those are what is being utilized for the upgrade. We will stay within those cost bounds, and we will produce a viable product on budget.
Short. Any other questions so far from the sponsor?
Quick question.
Senator Holland.
Can you imagine that this once this project is up and running, I'm a big believer in the Alaska Online Checkbook. I think it's a great idea. But I've also done 10 years with Alaska's DOT, and great 10 years I worked with them. And I remember when IRIS came on board, I'd hear the people in admin struggling to learn the new system. Can you imagine once this thing's up and running, is there still going to have to be someone who's going to have to keep their finger on the pulse of it and be prepared from month to month to be updating and making changes when just glitches happen or unexpected things arise out of the online checkbook?
Senator Holland, through the chair, yes, I do anticipate that to be a need. When we talked with the state of Ohio, they have two people on staff. They were unclear as to what percentage of their time is actually dedicated toward maintaining the online checkbook, but that is what their role is to kind of handle those very sort of questions that you're talking about. And so we do anticipate that we will have to have some resources deployed on an ongoing basis to making sure that the online checkbook stays up to date and we're reporting the information correctly. You know, for example, if there's a, you know, some kind of a change to accounting structures to accommodate something new in the budget, we'll have to make sure that the online checkbook is updated to properly reflect how that information is then being reported. If filters that aggregate data have to be redesigned, we'll have to make sure that a database specialist can get in there and make those changes. And so it will require ongoing maintenance for sure.
Thank you.
Any other questions at the moment? A couple more quick ones for me. You mentioned the folks that sounds like that are in the department, state employees. Are all of these upgrades being done by this contractor, CGI, or are state employees doing it, any of this as well? I guess it's kind of a yes or no.
Yes, it's both. It's a team of state employees, Chairman Schauer, and contractors. We have our programmer analysts within Division of Finance. There are five programmers and our database specialist all working on the project. We have our data systems manager is on the project. We have teams of both accounting and HR business analysts that work on the project to do configuration and testing. And that team works alongside the contractors from CGI, and they have about a dozen full-time individuals deployed to the project, but there are approximately 60 other individuals behind the scenes that are also working on the IRIS project. So it's somewhere around 70 at any given time total contractors that are contributing toward the development of IRIS alongside that fairly large team of state workers.
So I hear you telling me that you're going to be able to do this within the cost that you've given, the money that you have, that you're going to get this by this timeline, maybe disagreement on the getting that done, but I hear you say on cost or within your cost, on this time that you've given us and producing the products that you've mentioned that are going to work, and you're able to do this upgrade to IRIS while getting the online checkbook, so are we going to expect that everything is good to go soon and provide all of these things? Am I hearing a yes to that?
So the timeline would be that the IRIS upgrade goes live January of 2022. The legislation requires online checkbook to be live by October of 2022. Once the IRIS upgrade is complete, we'll be redeploying several resources over to online checkbook. with the assistance of probably one contractor and perhaps some help, outside help on design, because we want to make sure that we have a well-designed product that's going to be, that's going to take into account the needs of the individual users. And so we'd like some professional help on design. And then over a six-month period, it would be designed and built and ready to deploy on time with in accordance with this bill.
I'll be honest, at this point, I'm not really sure what else to ask. These are a list of questions I came up with. So does anybody, bill sponsor, have questions, or anybody else, other senators that are here today? Senator Willikowski?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any questions. I think you summed it up. I don't know that the fiscal notes change. I guess that's the big question to me. It sounded like they were going to do it with the funds that they have, but that was not completely clear to me.
Want a clarifying question? Ask it. We got them here.
Yeah, I'm just curious if there's a new, what the fiscal note is. Is it still indeterminate? Is it going to be absorbed in the administration's budget?
The fiscal note, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, the fiscal note may change. We were going to take the opportunity to do an amended fiscal note between here and Senate Finance, because it may change. I don't have a precise amount at this time. One of the areas of cost that we were looking at in the original note that's going to change is the forward-facing software itself. We've identified some licenses within the state that we already own that can be used for that forward-facing software. There may still be server costs that are necessary on the capital side. We also need to consider what the ongoing licensing costs could be associated with that software, but that would be in our fiscal note. So there has to be some breakout between operating and capital. And I think that the original note had entirely capital. And additionally, there's the question of, you know, outside help that we would need, especially, you know, on the design phase or any specialist help we may need for contractors. I sense that that the need for contractors could be less if we are waiting, if we keep the timeline as it is. But we want to take the opportunity to modify that note between here and the next committee.
Good, Senator Willikowski.
Yeah, just I guess a comment. And we'll continue to work with the administration, Mr. Chairman. And it's been a good, Nate spent quite a bit of time working on this, and they together contacted Ohio and talked to the administrators there. And we'd like to look like Ohio, but I understand that, and I understand also that the administration would like a Rolls Royce. We'd like a Rolls Royce, but I'm willing to settle for a Ford Focus. I understand in this process that administrations in the executive branch often ask in their fiscal notes for Rolls Royce funding. I've seen it with DOT projects all the time. I'd see roads and bridges and schools where they'd ask for millions, tens of millions more, and when you cut it back, they somehow miraculously get it done for much less money. And I've seen that in the various departments over the years, and on timelines, I've seen that as well, Mr. Chairman. This is a very long timeline. I'm not completely comfortable with it. I know the committee's not completely comfortable with it. I'd like a much shorter timeline, personally, but I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I want to keep the cost as low as possible. I'd love for them to be able to absorb it, quite frankly, completely in their budget. But I'll continue to work with them. This bill has a long way to go. It's got to go through finance, and I know they're going to scrutinize it very thoroughly, every fiscal aspect of it. And I'll continue to work with you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Holland, and your staff to the rest of the committee, of course, to come up with a good product that we can be proud of and that provides transparency that we all want. That's my commitment to you. I don't really have anything more to add. I do want to keep the costs low. I don't think we need a Rolls Royce. I guess that's my point.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. I as long as you didn't say Ford Pinto, because I drove one in high school that you could pull the stick shift out of, and it was $500, and I would say no, we don't want that. So all points well taken. You are in the next committee. I believe this goes to finance. So that you sit on that committee, I would think I would prefer not to hold the bill up waiting on those fiscal notes. You're going to have that for the next one. And that's an area where I'm sure we can look at tweaks or other things. If they want to change the timeline, that might be the time to do so. So we keep it moving because of that long road. So thank you for the time to come in here and explain the changes. I'll ask the committee, are there any further questions at this time from those here online? Only because I wanted, and this is a little non-traditional the way we did this here, but because of what happened today and the last time, I wanted to make sure we could get this covered. So thank you. You guys are cleared off the table. If you'd like to leave, that's fantastic. We're going to move on now to public testimony for SB 25. For those that may be online and listening, we also have SB 39 invited testimony next, and this is taking a little longer than we thought with some of the things that are happening here in the building. So just indulge your patience. We're going to get through this as quick as we can. Please hold on. Looking forward to your testimony in the next bill. We're going to continue now with public testimony, opening public testimony for SB 25. We have some folks online. We're going to start with Brenda Ungossen. I hope I said that right. Brenda, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Brenda, when you're ready, go ahead and put yourself on the record with your name, who you represent, 2 minutes, and when you hear the alarm go off, please wrap it up if it takes you 2 minutes or more, because we've got a lot of folks to get to. So when you're ready, please begin.
Okay. My name is Brenda Ingeson, and I'm calling on my behalf. I support Senate Bill 25 because Alaskans deserve transparency in government, and I look forward to Alaska not being one of the worst in the nation for making the data available. And I, too, would like a Rolls Royce. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for excellent testimony that was also very short. We're going to move on to Timothy Hill now. Timothy, if you can hear me, put yourself on the record with your name, who you represent, and 2 minutes. Please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Timothy Hale. I live in Butte outside of Palmer. I sit on the Matanuska-Susitna Borough Assembly, but my testimony here today is only in representation of myself. I'm just calling in today to support this Senate Bill 25. I think the online checkbook is a fantastic tool for the public, and even for senators and state House representatives. I will say, however, that the current online checkbook that we've been running for quite a long time to expand on Senator Wilikowski's metaphor is more about like a 92 Honda Accord with 300,000 miles on it. Over here in the Matsu, we put an online checkbook together last year. It was very quick and easy to do. We have a really fine product that was put together by the IT department and the finance department. You can find it on the Matsu Borough website, and you can really drill into what exactly we're spending our money on. And I think it's very user-friendly. And it didn't cost hardly anything. In fact, when I brought it forward to the assembly, there wasn't even a fiscal note attached to it. The IT department and the finance department were able to put it together and maintain it using the current personnel and not even costing them any overtime or anything. So I think these things are great. I would really like to see a better online checkbook for the state. I tried to dig into it one time to find out how much we were spending on the Kinnick River public use area, and I wound up having to call the Office of Management and Budget. So I really support this, and I hope you move forward with it. Thank you for your time.
You hit 2 minutes precisely. Well done. Thank you for your testimony. We're going to move on to, I hope I say this right, Estelle Tokish. Estelle, if you can hear us, you might be on mute. If not, just check and see
if
you're there.
I'm so sorry. You can hear me now?
Yes, ma'am. You're loud and clear. Go ahead and put yourself on the record with your name, who you are. You have 2 minutes. Please proceed.
Estelle Tokash, calling from Anchorage, and just on behalf of myself, I definitely support Senate Bill 25. I want to see more transparency with our government spending. And that's it.
Outstanding, Estelle. Thank you for calling in with the very concise testimony today. We're going to move on next to, and I hope I get this one right, Veri D. Suvero from the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. If you can hear us, go ahead, put yourself on the record who you represent, and begin.
Thank you, Senator Schauer, and you pronounced it perfectly. My name is Veri D. Suvero, and I represent the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, or ACPIRG. We were established in 1974, and we advocate on behalf of public and consumers' interests. To our knowledge, we're the only non-governmental, non-profit organization focused on addressing Alaska's specific consumer interest issues in the state. As we know, transparency is the cornerstone of a democracy. It's also essential for good government. Most Alaskans want to know what government is up to with their public dollars, and these Alaskans, including legislators, want this information to be easy to find. So we support SB 25, the Alaska Online Checkbook Act. The implementation of the Department of Administration's Alaska's online checkbook is critical because it enables the public to better understand what their government officials are up to and how they spend their public dollars. Public access to state financial information accomplishes many things. It empowers Alaskans, including legislators. It is an important element of government accountability, and it provides a more functional system of checks and balances. While the current online checkbook suffices for now, the enhancements contained within SB 25 facilitate a more seamless process when members of the public review state spending. These improvements include searchable features, addition of procurement documents and agencies who do not use the state accounting system, and embedded links to primary financial documents, among other things. We believe it's important to make this online checkbook so that expenses can be reviewed with the most ease possible. All accounting system code should be specific to the associated transaction and identified with explanations. Accounting terms should be defined, for example, the term roll-up. A chart of accounts guide, additionally, would be a really helpful tool for the public. We also believe that credits like tax credits, subsidies, and other costs need to be included in the Alaska Online Checkbook in order to reflect the true cost of certain policies, like senior credits, tax credits, education subsidies, et cetera. These figures would greatly aid in the public's understanding of where the money goes or doesn't go in these instances. Lastly, interagency receipts should also be included, especially if they deal with personal travel and relocation costs. The online checkbook system should be simple so that everyone can understand it, and in order to do that, it has to have all the information so Alaskans can see the true costs to run our state. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very for good testimony. I gave you a little extra time there because of the group and where you're coming from, so I appreciate you taking the time to call in today. We're going to move on to Nori Toller from Eagle River. If you can hear me, go ahead and put yourself on the record who you represent in 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Nori Toller. I am an IPAC from the villages of Iqaluit and Nuuksed. I currently am living in Eagle River, and I support this bill. I think it's really important to have transparency, many of the other testimonies given have been saying. I think it's important to have it be comprehensive, to know where all of our money is going, and to be easy to navigate this so the average person can go in there and take a look and see what's going on and not struggle with having to be familiar with the system or stumble around within it. I also think that we should have the results of some money's being put into, I don't know if this is a good example, but say there's some money allotted for a playground and that money is spent, but no playground was built. That's concerning. So I think that we should also have the results built into this if possible. And I think it would create a better ability for Alaskans to take a look and see where our money's going and see if that's where we want it to go so we can have a voice and moving towards spending money towards what Alaskans actually want. And, I think also Rolls Royce would be awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Nora, for taking the time to call and testify today. We have one last one, Terry Lyons from Wasilla. Terry, when you're ready, put yourself on the record. Who you represent in 2 minutes, please.
Senator Showers, I'm sorry. I'm here to testify for SB 39, not 25. So my mistake. If you'd like to mute me, and I'll wait until you're ready for 39.
There, you can stay right here. We'll keep you where you're at. I think they can move you over, but we'll have you on the line, so just stay there. We'll put you in the right place, but thank you for calling in. We'll get to you. And at this time, we're going to close. Well, I don't see anybody else online for public testimony. Anybody else in the room would like to testify? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony at this time for Senate Bill 25. For a reminder, those online or those who watch it later, if you didn't get a chance to call in, you can always submit your written testimony. We'll put it on the record at ssta@akleg.gov. Before we finish up today, I know that we had the commissioner here. Commissioner Shibaka, are you able to hear? Are you with us? If you are with us, you may be on mute. We don't hear you.
Hi, this is Commissioner Shibaka.
Okay, Commissioner, we've got you now. I know we had you and Hans, and there were some problems getting you online here. It may have dropped off, so just in case you got cut out, I'll give you an opportunity to comment here, because I think we may have missed you for a good portion of this. So please don't take too long, because we got to get into the next one. But if you'd like to take a few minutes, make some comments with all of the questions we had, I would appreciate it. So you have the floor if you'd go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. This is Commissioner Chewbacca, Department of Administration. Director Zygmunt covered most everything. I just want to sum up a couple key points. We've chosen to prioritize the IRIS upgrade because it's been unsupported since April of 2019. And since it is such a critical infrastructure for running the state, I've asked Hans to prioritize that for our team. Our Division of Finance team has really limited staff and financial resources. And because we don't have the capacity to take on many projects with that limited team, I've asked him to focus on the IRIS upgrade. Like he said, it's on time and on budget. The only delay we've hit so far was when we took down the original checkbook, which his team didn't program. It was programmed with predecessors to the current team, and he had to fix it. That cost him about $200,000 that he didn't have appropriated, and that delayed a little bit of the IRIS programming, but he's going to be able to make up that time. My concern only is that we have a bunch of other projects that are hitting that team, like we have a new Treasury audit of the Coronavirus Relief Fund. We've got updating the accounting system if the Department of Health and Social Services restructuring is passed. We've got the CAFR coming up at the end of this year. And so when he said, you know, we can support the bill for the new online checkbook, the condition is yes if we get the IRIS upgrade finished first. And that's the one thing I wanted to add. Otherwise, I think that it's been conveyed that we're fully in support of an online checkbook. We support transparency in the state's expenditures and increased accountability for the state. Thanks for having us with you today.
Thank you, Commissioner, for those comments. It sounds like the bill sponsor is willing to work on, you know, some negotiation as far as cost or the Cadillac versus the Ford Pinto. So I'm sure there's some room in there if we needed to adjust. And I'm sure you guys will answer questions in the following committee, as there was quite a bit of angst. I don't know if you had a chance to hear from the previous hearing about the timeline, so perhaps that's something that can be worked on as it moves into the next committee and or the House for what we might do to make it a little faster if we don't need all of the bells and whistles. So again, thank you for taking the time. At this time, I'm going to go ahead and set Senate Bill 25 aside. We'll bring it up again intending next week to have the amendments that were given, and we'll probably move the bill out that time. So at this point, we're moving on to testimony. Thank you for Senator Wilkowski. You guys can head out. We'll be done. We're going to move over to, at this time, Senate Bill 39. We have invited testimony today. It is ballot custody tampering voter registration by mail. Like I said, invited testimony. We have a list of folks that have called in, so we're going to go ahead and get started there at this time. We have, actually, I need to open. No, I don't. It's not public testimony. This is invited testimony. Thank you. So we have starting off, we're going to start with Ellen Zatera. And this is invited testimony, so I'm not going to do the two-minute timer here. All I would ask is, we've had some of you very patiently waiting online. We're still hoping to get one or two more. We're having a hard time reaching them. If you would give us a few minutes of what you saw based on conversations and your testimony, there may be a few questions from committee members that we'll ask at that time. But do not feel rushed like you have to meet a two-minute timeline. There's a few minutes for us, but just we're going to try to keep it to about 5 minutes per person, if we can, or less, just to get through everybody. So that being said, like I said, we're going to go back to Ellen Zatera, who is from Copper Center. Ellen, when you are ready, and if you can hear us okay, go ahead and put yourself on the record with who you are and who you represent today, and provide us your testimony, please, and thank you for joining us.
Hello, my name is Ellen Zatera. Oh, a little bit of feedback. My name is Ellen Zatera, and I'm representing myself. I'm calling to testify on receiving two ballots by mail. I received them in the second or third week of October. So I threw the first one out due to the fact that I was voting in person, and it was out of spite and out of aggravation. I apologize. I didn't think much of receiving the first ballot, and so I threw it away. However, a week later, I received a second one by mail, and I threw that one out away as well, because at the time I believed that there was nothing that could be done about it, and I didn't think much of it. The first one I threw away due to the fact that I felt like everyone was receiving them across Alaska due to the really hard push for the ballots being mailed in. However, about December 11th through the 13th, I don't remember the exact date, I received another letter, an apology letter from the Lieutenant Governor of Alaska, and it was stating that there was a, quote, incident involving exposure of personally identifiable information. Due to this, they gave me a year subscription to Equifax, Credit Watch, Gold, due to the fact that my identity had been stolen. However, they reassured me that the election was still legitimate and that there was nothing that that there was no reason or threat for my towards my vote. However, it makes me question how a third party could steal my most private information, but I can be reassured that my vote was not mishandled. So it makes me question the entire election due to just this one incident of receiving two ballots and then my identity being stolen.
Thank you, Ellen. I have a question for you, just for the record, to be specific. There has been a lot of discussion of folks that have reached out to us, and we've had many hundreds now that have said they received ballots. Division of Elections has said that in most cases, if not all, those were not ballots, they were applications. So can you illuminate for the committee and for the record that you understand the difference between an application and a ballot, and how did you know that those were ballots as opposed to applications?
Yes, they were ballots due to the fact that when I opened them, there was nowhere for me to sign or to sign up for it. I received ballots that had the circles and to fill out, as well as the names of the individuals that I was able to vote for.
And you
do admit I did tear it and looked at it briefly. I turned to my family and I said, look at this. And then I immediately threw it away. So I didn't have it for very long, but I knew what I saw. And I can testify that, yes, it was a ballot that I received both times.
And those were not, you did not request those, is that correct?
No, I did not request them.
Did you also vote in person?
I did vote in person, yes.
One last question, just to confirm that you got ballots you did not request, and you also received a letter from the state saying your data was compromised. Is that all true?
Yes.
Those are the questions I have for you. Thank you very much for calling in. There may be other questions from anyone.
You answered all mine.
Okay. Any questions from anyone else? Ellen, thank you very much for taking the time. That's very good testimony. I appreciate it. It's helping us to show that there are some areas that we probably need to be paying attention to. So thank you very much. And we're going to go on at this time to the next testifier. We're going to go to Arnie Oidna, who's in Juneau. Arnie, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, Arnie, just a couple minutes here. Like I said, we're trying to keep it a little bit short just so we can get everybody. We've got a growing list. But if you can, when you're ready, give us your name, who you represent, and can you provide us a couple minutes of your testimony, please, relative to election integrity with ballots.
Boydna, represent myself. And like the previous caller, I received the unsolicited ballot. And I know the difference between the application and a ballot. This was a ballot. And that's basically it. With me is Mr. Kenny Carl Skaplestad, and he would like to also make a few comments.
Stand by one second. Is that okay to do? I'm okay. I can accept that. Okay, that's okay, Arnie. We'll take that. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't breaking some protocol. Can you spell his name again for the other gentleman, and I will gladly go ahead and take his testimony when he's ready.
I'll let him do it.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Senator. This is Kenny Skaflestad. Last name is spelled S-K-A-F-L-E-S, as in Sam, T-A-D.
Thank you. Go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
This season, I was, as the former mayor of Hoonah, I had a visitor from out of town who was in an impromptu conversation with somebody on the street that I could tell he didn't recognize. I certainly didn't. I approached that conversation, and it was a person with a briefcase who had printed ballots and was offering to take this gentleman's ballot there on the street. And he told him that he wasn't even from Hoonah, that he didn't know if they had the right ballot, but he intended to vote differently. And they persisted and offered to hand and fill out the ballot, as well as he gave him a bunch of news on how they thought he might consider voting. I was taken aback by this, and the very next day I received three phone calls from my neighbors who were approached at their door with persons carrying ballots. One person said it was the fourth time they had received two ballots in the mail, had never asked for them. They finally asked the person to no longer approach them, call them, come to their home, that how they voted was their own business. And it was a pretty upsetting. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Was this reported to any either Division of Elections or law enforcement or anybody else?
It was not reported, no.
Would you be willing to reach out to our office and speak with us offline after this? I would like to take some information and perhaps forward this on.
Yes, sir. I sure will.
Okay. Arnie has our number because we talked to him recently. So if Arnie, if you would please provide him our number so we can contact him about this. Thank you very much. I was not expecting this. Did not know there was a different one.
My number is 907-723-5846.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for that time, and I really appreciate it. And thanks for that revelation. That's one I had not heard. So, but don't worry, I have been assured by many people there is no fraud. So I've heard that many times in the last month or so. Okay, so we're going to move on at this time to Brian Endel, who is in Palmer. Brian, when you're ready, go ahead and put yourself on the record, who you represent, provide your testimony. And again, just if we could keep it as limited as possible, just to make sure we've got a few more people online that are waiting. Thank you. Please begin.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. My name is Brian Endel. I'm representing myself. I mainly dealt with election integrity in the past a little over a year, I think. So my qualifications are I graduated from UWC in 1995 with a bachelor's in MIS, so basically I'm a computer programmer. Worked in the computer industry for over 20 years. Worked as a database administrator, networking, IT projects, managing them, and supervising IT personnel. So also worked for Madagascar Telephone Association and ConocoPhillips. That's kind of my background. The election integrity group that I worked with made two presentations, one to the governor and one to lieutenant governor. The one to lieutenant governor is on the Alaska Republican Assembly website, AlaskaRA.com. So I basically made the statement that it's impossible to guarantee the validity or integrity of an election with electronic voting machines. The only way to ensure valid elections with paper ballots and with hand counting election results upon request from either party. So I demonstrated the problems with electronic voting machines and basically the fact that any one of them can be manipulated. The instructions that have to go with the voting machine for each election, they call it code, call it instructions, call it whatever, they can be manipulated. And they can be manipulated on a single scale or on a wide scale. And we presented all this information to them with YouTube videos showing certain things, such as electronic voting machines reversing elections, recounts being denied with evidence of incorrect tabulation, hacking AccuVote optical scanner, that's the pre-2020 election machine. So we showed the actual voting machine that's used in the Matsu Valley being hacked. So this, even the old ones. So we got the old ones, we got the new Dominion ones. There are problems with all of them. We demonstrated those. We had cybersecurity experts on YouTube. You know, we showed a little video of that, Fraction Magic, which showed how these machines, they store votes as fractions. This should be illegal anyway. We showed Alaska Hack HBO documentary and a one-minute hack of electronic voting machine on Fox News. So my suggestions are go to paper ballots, get rid of electronic voting machines, re-register yearly in person unless unable. Voter ID, require that. Strict rules for absentee ballots, must show ID in person. No mail-in ballots, no ballot harvesting allowed. Forensic audit of 2020 voting machines, comprehensive audit of 2020 Alaska votes, especially absentee ballots, and then ballot counting at the precinct level. So that's my condensed version. I did send you a complete version of this, Senator Schauer, and I appreciate you allowing me time. If you have any questions, go for it.
Mr. Andrew, I do not have questions at this time. Our bill is really focused on, chain of custody and a few other issues, not specifically the machines, but the testimony is well taken, so I appreciate that time. Are there questions from the committee members?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and okay, so I have no other questions this time. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the next testifier, and we're going to because I hit you first, and I'm going to skip a little line. I've got Susie and Viola next. We'll get to you shortly. This is moving fairly quickly. But Terry Lyons, I'm going to go ahead and go to you next in Wasilla because I called on you before and had you in the wrong bill there. So when you're ready, go ahead and put yourself on the record who you represent and provide your testimony, please.
My name is Terry Lyons, and I represent myself and my deceased husband of 2.5 years. We got ballots, not applications for ballots for the primary and the general election, and I was furious, and it astounded me that I received a ballot for my husband who has been deceased, and I threw him away. I voted in person, and when I spoke to you the first time, Senator Showers, you asked me to go to the elections office or to call them and verify whether I had voted or my husband had voted. I went to the elections office in Wasilla, and they were closed due to COVID, which I would think at this point in time they would have been essential workers, but the office is closed. I've tried to call the elections office in Anchorage multiple times, and I cannot get through to speak to anyone. I don't know if my husband voted. I know I voted in person. I don't know if it was counted. But I think this voting fraud is out of hand, and we need to get a handle on it and get it stopped.
Okay.
That's my testimony.
Thanks, Terry. Just to be clear again for the record, you received ballots that you did not request, and you can confirm they were ballots, not applications. Is that all true?
Correct. Yes. Okay. That's true.
And just because we're asking the question based on further information we've learned over the last month plus, did you get a letter from the state that said your data was compromised?
No, I did not get one of those letters.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking the time and calling in today. We're going to go next just in order for when they showed up. We've got two more, but hopefully one more on the line when we can find her. We've got Viola Amberg. Ma'am, when you're ready, please put yourself on the record with your name and who you represent, and please provide us your testimony.
Hello, my name is Viola Amberg, and I live in Copper Center. My testimony today is about my elderly father who was staying with us from July through December. He's bedridden and requires a wheelchair to leave the home, and he was insistent that he wanted to vote. And so we brought him with us to our local library here in our little town. So he's in the wheelchair, and I went in ahead, and I explained to them that, you know, I have my father in the car, and he would like to vote, but he can't. So I was wondering if somebody could come out. He can't come in, so I was wondering if somebody could come out and witness his vote. And I had his ID in front of me, and they told me that it was not necessary for somebody to go out there, and it was not necessary for me to show them his ID. And I said, well, okay. And they handed me the absentee ballot, and they said, go ahead and take this out to him. And I went out and, you know, went over each choice with him, and we filled it out. And I just kept saying to my family in the car that I don't see how this is legal. I mean, I could be filling this out. I could be voting twice. So a note is that I'm relatively new to the community. I didn't recognize one person inside of the voting station, the polling station. And so I was like, these people don't know me. They don't, you know, I know how small towns are. I grew up in Valdez. So, but I just, that was it. It was really strange, and there was just no quality control at all.
Okay. I don't have any questions, Viola, from the committee. Thank you very much for taking the time to call in and present that to us as well. That'll be entered into the record. Thank you. And we're going to move on at this time to who's been waiting. We have two left. We've got Susie Siebert from Trapper Creek. Susie, when you're ready, please put yourself on the record and provide your testimony.
Hi, my name is Susie Siebert. I am representing myself. I live in Trapper Creek, Alaska. I can't be positive of the exact dates that I received the information that I did. I want to say in September, I received an application to apply for a ballot. And my sweetheart did also. We threw them away and burned them. About a week later, I received a second application for a ballot. Again, I threw it away, and we burned all of our paperwork there. About 2 weeks later, I received two different ballots in the mail. I did not show my sweetheart because he is more involved in this conspiracy stuff, and I knew if I told him that things would not go well with that. So I burned those. I wish I had at least taken pictures of them. We postponed our trip. We wanted to vote in person, so we rescheduled our trip. What we did do was early voting. We went down to our local library and early voted. I was disappointed to know that our vote was still going to get put in the mail, but it did. We were gone for about 6 weeks, and when I came home, I had received a letter in the mail stating that my vote might have been breached or compromised. I tried to go online to see if I could figure out if my vote had counted or not, and I couldn't navigate the system very well, so I don't know if my vote counted or not.
Okay, Susie, thank you, and I will ask the same questions. You probably heard some waiting online, just to be specific, because we have had people from Division of Elections and some others that have questioned whether people understand the difference between an application and a ballot. You've pretty clearly illuminated that, but I'm going to ask it for the record. You know the difference between an application and a ballot, as you have said, and you can confirm that you had both applications and ballots. Applications and ballots you did not request, but you received them. Is that true?
I am 100% positive I received ballots I threw away the application.
And you received a letter from the state as confirmation that your data was compromised, also correct?
Without question, I received a letter.
Okay. You've answered my questions very clearly. Thank you for that. I'll defer if there are other questions from other committee members.
No, Mr. Chairman, those are my questions. She just confirmed she received two applications about a week apart, and then later she received two ballots about a week apart, correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. That's very helpful. So thank you very much for taking the time to call in today. We're going to move over to our last testifier now is Barbara Haney from the North Pole. Barbara, when you're ready, you know the drill. Put yourself on the record and who you represent, and please provide your testimony. And you are the last one, Barbara, so I'm not going to rush it. Whenever we've got time, you're free to take the floor.
All right. Well, thank you very much. My name is Barbara Haney, and I'm staff to Representative Mike Prox in the House, but I'm calling on my own accord. He didn't ask me to call or anything like that. This is not, I don't regard this as something that, you know, represents him. But in the performance of my duties in working for the representative, I frequently consult the voter database. Where our offices are at is at the intersection of District 5, 1, 3, 6, and we occasionally get people from District 7. And many times people don't understand who their rep is or anything. They just, they're in the mall, they come in, they got a problem. And while I often handle them, I do like to look up what district they're in and let that representative know that person X has this person, this problem, Y, and I CC them on the issues at hand. So I'm in that database pretty frequently, and there are some problems with that database, I will assure you. One of them is we sent an informational letter out to new voters back in August, and we sent out about 5,000. We had about 5,000 new people who were new to voting from the prior election, and we probably received back 15 to 20% of those with address the unknown. Now, there were a few people, probably about 5%, that what they did is they got P.O. boxes, but they let their P.O. box lapse and went back to just getting mail at home, and that's fine. But probably about 15% of them were no longer at that address, and they were new voters. So I don't even want to think about what's going on with the longer-term voters. Second, we've got a lot of voters on that database who are passed. They're deceased, and I'm pretty sure of it because I get the Santa Senior newsletter, and they announce the deaths each week, and I go in there, yep, I can see that. And so I've been kind of tracking that for a while, and there's quite a few people in there who have gone to change their address to heaven, and they're still in there. I haven't noticed any of them voting, but I do check to see if some of them had voted. So far, I haven't found any that did, but I do check. The other thing that often happens, and this has happened like three times since I've started working for the rep in July, we'll have people come in, they have issues with the permanent fund dividend check and trying to prove residency and all that good stuff, and they're in there, and we start talking, and all of a sudden it turns out they've got these citizenship things going on with the State Department. I'm like, oh, okay. It's like, so wait a minute. You're not a citizen? No, I'm not there yet. I just have an INS card. Oh, okay. And then I look, and they're in the voter database. And I don't say anything to those people, but it has made me really wonder who's checking citizenship, because if somebody's a citizen, they should not be in the voter database. That data somehow should be siloed from either the DMV or the PFD in people. And I don't know if there's some coding that I'm not seeing, but it seems to me they look like they're registered to vote, and it's only because they're good people that they haven't. And I end up getting a lot of people who have kind of issues with that because my late husband was an immigrant, so people knew who we were, and we kind of knew the process to getting citizenship. So anyway, there's a lot of problems with that database, and certainly there are some people who don't vote because they have some kind of religious conviction about voting. For example, Jehovah's Witnesses and some Mennonite orders, they don't vote by virtue of their religious teachings, but and they should be on the voter database. But there's an awful lot of people who are there that they haven't voted since 2010 or, you know, maybe even longer. And they're still on the voter rolls, and I look at them, and I know for a fact that I know the district. I've lived here 30 years. We've driven by some of these places. There's nobody there, or whoever's there is not who's registered. So that database needs to be cleaned up. Now, I know Senate Bill 39, this Senate bill doesn't, like, address all of that, but I do believe we have to do some things to ensure the election integrity, and until we can clean up that database, I would think anybody who is even remotely interested in election integrity would be supporting SB 39. I guess I'll stop there, and you can ask me any questions if you want.
I do have a couple things here, Barbara. One of them is we are We started this effort, I have to keep mentioning this because people have asked me to, you know, we started this effort almost 3 years ago. First version of the bill was filed over 2 years ago when one half of the country was upset about the election results and they didn't say a peep. And now the two, you know, a couple of years later, the other half of the country is upset about election results, and now I'm getting hit from the side that originally didn't seem to care. And the point being is that we should be, all of us should be concerned that we get our election system as tight as we can make it. And we started with chain of custody, and you've heard some of that today, to show the fact that we say we have, you know, election integrity. However, there are people getting ballots that they did not request. Who knows what happens to them, how many. We had a massive data breach. I can tell you, as we got a piece of information just yesterday or the day before, and out of the 113,000 names, we were scanning through where they're from because we didn't have all the information, just location. About 600 plus of those names are foreign countries: Vietnam, China, Russia, Uzbekistan, Venezuela, Costa Rica. And that makes sense how, along with the other things. So there's, we hear what you're saying too, because one of the efforts that we are looking at, and as we have investigated this, was the voter rolls. And we know we have a whole lot of things that are wrong with those voter rolls, including how we cross-check the data. And one of the things we are exploring and hoping to be able to do is to find a way to clean up the data rolls by cross-checking via the various systems. And there's probably 12 or 14 we looked at that we have information that would help us keep them current, so we would get rid of some of this possibility, mostly for error, with how many people we have on the rolls, as well as that chain of custody. Those are pretty important factors. So we are seeing some of what you are describing here, which is why I'm shaking my head a bit for some of what you're saying, because the more we peel back the layers of the onion, as people tell me everything's fine and there's nothing wrong, I would disagree based on what we're seeing. And also trying to show people that are scoffing what we're doing, that know there are people that know the difference between an application and a ballot, and they're getting them and they did not request them. So that added to the data breach, no chain of custody to speak of, a judge taking away witness signature as our one possible cross-check, and ballot harvesters running through neighborhoods doing some of these things, like the guy just testified from Hoonah that I didn't even heard that one yet. It's hard for me, like you said, to believe anybody can look at this and go, no, everything's fine, we don't need to do anything. And I would strongly and vehemently disagree with that. So thank you for that testimony. I guess that's more of a comment than a question, because we're seeing some of exactly what you've said. So I'll stop there.
Let me add something here, too. Sure. My husband recently died, but he did vote in this past election, but he was alive, okay? He was being constantly hit by something called the Voter Information Center. And, I mean, he was getting bombarded with mail from them. And they were targeting anybody who was a U or an N. I didn't get any mail from them, but I'm a registered R and a proud R. Another friend of mine, who we're good friends, but she's a D, she didn't get any mail from them either. So this was an entity that was targeting N's and U's. And they were getting considerable amount of mail.
Okay, thank you for that addition.
I'll just offer that to you for whatever purposes it might illuminate.
Thank you. The other part we're having a tough time with is figuring out just, you know, knowing, having some idea of who committed the data breach. We don't necessarily know. I don't. And so far we're not able to get that information, is where that information ended up. How might it have been used? Could it have been used or sold in a way that somebody could have used it to target, you know, certain individuals, like you're talking about this very center? That may not be the case. We're not even contending it's the case. We simply want to get the information, and so far we don't have it. So I'm going to defer here. If there, Senator Holland, did you have any questions?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and we are still a few minutes short. Barbara, last comments, or otherwise I'll end here.
No, just thank you very much for your work on this legislation, because we desperately need it. And I do hope that there's some way to clean up these voter rolls. I have some ideas on that. I'm not sure how viable they are, but it seems to me when you have a national change of data database that is by one branch of government, it could, and the death index, those should be readily usable for the Division of Elections.
I certainly agree, and you are welcome to submit those to the office. You certainly know how to do that. We would welcome your ideas. We're continuing to explore as we work through the process. So thank you very much, Barbara, for taking the time to call in today.
Thank you very much.
Okay. At this time, thank you to everybody that was online, especially for your patience. I imagine many of you are probably offline at this point. I know that took a little longer than I wished for, but we did make it under the 5 o'clock bell. Our next meeting is going to be Tuesday, March 1st at 3:30 p.m. We're going to be hearing SB 83 elections voting ballot requirements and SB 84 land vouchers, PFDs, and a back to SGR 1 constitutional amendment guaranteed permanent fund dividend from various entities. Seeing no further business in front of the committee at this time, we're going to go ahead and adjourn at 4:57. Thank you.